This is a CBS News special report, The Crisis in Vietnam. Here from New York is CBS News correspondent Richard C. Hotlett.
Halfway around the world today, the military power of the United States lashed out against a communist aggressor. It was a new kind of act in a new kind of war, at least so far. In this special broadcast, we will look at the new crisis in Vietnam, what it means to the people directly involved and to those on their side, with reports from Washington, Paris, Moscow, and the United Nations. We will examine the questions it raises for peace, for the communist and the Western alliance systems, and for the American election campaign. We will have some exclusive answers from Secretary of State Dean Rusk and Secretary of Defense Robert McNamara. The crisis began on Sunday, August 2nd, when the destroyer Maddox of the United States 7th Fleet, patrolling international waters in the Gulf of Tonkin, suddenly found itself attacked by three North Vietnamese torpedo boats. It fought them off, but the purpose of their mission remained mysterious. Perhaps it was some strange fluke, a wild impulse, a mistake. Then, yesterday, the same destroyer, with a sister ship, was attacked again by a larger force of communist PT boats. Again, the attackers were driven off with bloody losses. But this time, Washington did not just ponder the mystery. The alarm bells rang and the buttons were pushed. Not the button. This was a sophisticated, graduated response planned with a wide range of consequences in mind. For that many-sided story, we switch first to the Pentagon in Washington, CBS News correspondent Neil Strausser reporting.
Secretary of Defense McNamara told CBS News tonight that later reconnaissance reports have borne out the estimates of heavy damage inflicted by our airstrikes on North Vietnamese torpedo boat bases. We ask if he considered the mission, retaliation against the PT boat attacks, accomplished.
Very successfully.
Why do you think that the North Vietnamese carried out the PT boat attacks in the first
place? I can't say. It was deliberate, unprovoked aggression on the high seas. And it'd be sheer speculation on my part to attempt to explain the reason for that attack.
The North Vietnamese have made one reaction. They've claimed that they have shot down five of our aircraft. You said, I believe, we lost two.
We lost two aircraft and we had one damaged. Earlier today, I believe I said two, but it turned out that there was only one damaged. That aircraft that was damaged landed at Da Nang in South Vietnam. It had very minor damage and will be shortly returned to the fleet.
The North Vietnamese also claim to have captured an American pilot. Does that seem borne out?
That is possible. We, as I say, lost two aircraft, one an A-1 aircraft and the other an A-4 aircraft. Each of these contained one pilot. We believe one of the pilots was lost. One of the pilots may have landed in North Vietnam.
Returning a moment to the strike at the torpedo boat bases, do you still hold to the figure of about 25 boats?
Yes, I think that about 25 of the craft were either damaged or destroyed.
Is that just about the sum total of the North Vietnamese?
No, I suspect that they have perhaps a quarter to one-third of their patrol boat force operational.
Do you?
But the bulk of them have been eliminated from operational use.
Do you consider that still a threat?
No, I think that the strike was highly successful.
Do you see any sign of any other response from the North Vietnamese at this point?
None so far.
No other provocation?
They may continue their aggression on the high seas. If they do, we will certainly respond as we have both on Sunday and again yesterday and today.
Are there any other spots where they might commit provocation?
They are carrying out unprovoked aggression in Laos, in South Vietnam, and more recently on the high seas. I think this is a pattern of aggression that is typical of what we can expect from the communist Chinese and their allies.
Secretary McNamara said he's confident the reinforcements ordered into Southeast Asia can handle any eventuality should there be provocations elsewhere from the communists, and he said he's planning to spend this night at home instead of in his office sleeping, which may be taken as an estimate of just where this crisis stands militarily, at least for the moment. For the White House side of the story, here is CBS News White House correspondent Dan Rather.
Lyndon Johnson, like John Kennedy before him, has said the presidency is a lonely job. He had occasion to feel that way again this morning as he stayed up until 2 a.m. listening to reports about the airstrikes against North Vietnam bases. He was up again about 7 o'clock, received additional reports, then left to keep a long-scheduled speaking date at Syracuse University in New York. The president looked sleepy and somber on the Syracuse platform. He urged our allies to support the Vietnam action, saying the world must never forget that aggression unchallenged is aggression unleashed. Then, in a clear warning to Red China, the president added,
"And to any who may be tempted to support or to widen the present aggression, I say this. There is no threat to any peaceful power from the United States of America." But there can be no peace by aggression, and no immunity from reply.
Mr. Johnson returned to Washington for another round of conferences with Defense Secretary McNamara, Secretary of State Rusk, and the President's Special Assistant for National Security, McGeorge Bundy. He sent a special message to Congress spelling out his recommendations for a resolution on American determination to continue opposing aggression in Southeast Asia. Then, in an obvious move designed to settle down the public image of crisis at the White House, the news office announced Mr. Johnson was not likely to have any more public statements before morning at the earliest. This is Dan Rather, CBS News at the White House. Now here is CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb, who today talked with Secretary of State Rusk.
The operating assumption here now is that the Chinese communists not only knew about, but also encouraged the North Vietnamese action against American ships on the high seas, a limited military action reminiscent of the Chinese attack against India in 1962, meant to provoke a limited military counteraction by the United States and a major crisis in Southeast Asia. Four reasons are offered tentatively for this new twist in communist strategy. First, to abort a highly advertised Western military move against North Vietnam. A crisis produces, among other things, a loud chorus of propaganda and a bad case of diplomatic jitters that bring the spotlight of world attention on Vietnam, creating international pressures to contain, not to expand, the fighting. Second, these pressures increase the chances for an international conference on Vietnam. Soviet officials have privately passed the word a conference would be their solution to this crisis. Third, an American attack against North Vietnam, a member of the communist bloc, places the Russians in an extremely awkward position and, in fact, embarrasses them. Something that intensely pleases the Chinese. To be ideologically consistent, Moscow must help North Vietnam. But to be militarily and diplomatically realistic, Moscow probably will limit her response to propaganda and seek a conference. And finally, the crisis provides the Chinese with a foreign scapegoat, a distraction, while Mao Zedong grapples with a political crisis at home caused by pro-Russian sentiment within his own view. I asked him what he thought about mounting pressures to bring this crisis to the conference table.
Well, I think that the idea of an international conference on Vietnam is premature. I say that because there needs to be some indication that conferences are going to produce a desired result. We've had political settlements in 1954 and 1962. Those have been violated, basically violated by the other side. Now, in the case of Cambodia, we've hoped that the UN Commission would make a report on what could be done along that Cambodian border. They've now recommended that UN observers be present. Let's see whether the other side is willing to have even that step toward pacification along that border. In the case of Laos, an agreement as recent as 1962, Prince Souphanouvong, the Prime Minister of Laos, has said that if the Pathet Lao withdraw from the areas in the Plain de Jar, which they took in April, and recognize Prince Souphanouvong as the Prime Minister in a clear and unequivocal way, that the door could be opened to a Geneva conference. These are the smallest signs and hints that one would need to believe that a conference could produce a constructive and a desirable result. Otherwise, a conference could meet, break up after a violent dispute with no result, and the situation could be worse than it was before you went.
Now, for a look at some of the political implications of the Vietnam crisis, here is CBS News correspondent Wells Church at the U.S. Capitol.
Beneath the glamour of swift presidential action and the flag in deadly conflict in Southeast Asia are issues of equally deep significance for the 1964 presidential campaign. A flag-waving tribute to the Johnson action in the House brought cries of regular order from the Republican side. That's parliamentary language for sit down. Nor was the going much different on the Senate side. Listen to Senator Wayne Morse, Democrat of Oregon.
The incident that has inspired the president's resolution on the war in Asia is as much the doing of the United States as it is the doing of North Vietnam. For 10 years, the role of the United States in South Vietnam has been that of a provocateur. The American effort to impose by force of arms a government of our own choosing upon a segment of the old colony of Indochina has caught up with us.
But back of this picture of seeming disunity is the certain passage before the week is out of a joint resolution expressing the sense of Congress as at one with the president. Here is that view by Senator Humphrey, assistant Democratic leader in the Senate.
There was no partisanship that Republican and Democrat alike supported the president's hand. This is one of the most reassuring developments in American public life and in the American scene. And I noticed that Senator Goldwater was informed. He likewise supported the president's position. I hope that this message gets across to people in other parts of the world. We can have our differences over policy, but you cannot have any differences here at home, it seems to me, when American sovereignty, and after all, a ship of the United States Navy is a part of the United States. And when it is attacked in open seas and has not been engaged in any hostile mission, I don't think you can tolerate it.
And it was put another way by Senator Hickenlooper, a Republican from Iowa. Asian policy is one thing, he said. Firing on American ships is quite another. He made it evident that there will be small dissent from Republicans because their leader, Senator Goldwater, has made his position clear, victory or else in Asia. His running mate, Representative Miller of New York, said, as of now, it's no issue.
And so as of this date, of course, South Vietnam is no issue. We back fully and completely the action of the president. But whether or not this will remove South Vietnam as an issue for the campaign in later months, one cannot state at this time.
After this Mr. Miller, an issue again in September or October, what circumstances would again make it an issue?
You would have to assess the situation in September and in October to determine whether or not there was a policy being followed by this administration which was leading to a success in South Vietnam. If we suffer a deterioration from now on, the situation is reversed in September, in late September or October. It could, just as Korea was in 1952, be a major issue.
Wells Church, CBS News, Washington.
One central purpose ran through every major American statement and action in the past 24 hours. The determination to remain within the bounds of accepted legality and not to let the forces of war run wild. This was most clearly apparent in the president's decision to take the matter at once to the United Nations. Our ambassador to the UN, Adlai Stevenson, stated the American case this afternoon. He disputed any suggestion that the United States had strategic designs on Southeast Asia, and he sketched the picture of what this country wants in that part of the world.
There is a very easy way to restore order in Southeast Asia. There is a very simple, safe way to bring about the end of United States military aid to the Republic of Vietnam. Let all foreign troops withdraw from Laos. Let all states in that area make and abide by the simple decision to leave their neighbors alone. Stop the secret subversion of other people's independence. Stop the clandestine and illegal transit of national frontiers. Stop the export of revolution.
Mr. Stevenson spoke calmly, almost casually. It was as if he were making a conscious effort not to stir up further tension with harsh language. His manner was a far cry indeed from the supercharged drama that gripped him when he represented the United States at the same Security Council table in the Cuban Missile Crisis of 1962. The same was true, in the main, for the Soviet representative who answered Mr. Stevenson at once. We wanted a somewhat broader reading of the impact abroad than we got at the council table, and we called first on Walter Lister in Moscow.
So far, the effect is almost slight. There's no air of crisis, and the events in Vietnam are not even top news here. The CAS has issued a statement in which they try to get around the central fact of the counterattack in North Vietnam. They're more concerned about the mere presence of the American Navy in the Gulf of Tonkin. And they talk about any further rash acts or provocations could lead to serious trouble. In effect, they're trying to pretend that nothing much has happened yet.
Frank Kearns in Paris. France has been pretty unhappy about the American involvement in Southeast Asia for a long time. Is Paris any unhappier today?
It's quite unhappy, but there's been no official statement, Dick. But they've made their position quite clear, and it's not exactly friendly.
Paul Niven in Washington, you've been on Capitol Hill. Has there been any air of crisis there, bewilderment, or, let's say, disagreement with the administration's decision?
A little air of crisis, yes. Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen said a few minutes ago, this is not a ping-pong game. Unanimity, almost, with rare exceptions such as the perennial dissenters, Oregon Democratic Senator Wayne Morse. All Republicans and Democrats are solidly behind the president in this action. This is normal on Capitol Hill in time of crisis. However, there's a concomitant feeling that this is fortuitously or otherwise got President Johnson off the hook politically on the Vietnam issue with regard to the forthcoming presidential election.
How do you figure that?
Well, the Republicans have been arguing for months for a stronger policy. Week after week, Dirksen and Congressman Halleck have been accusing the administration of being indecisive or insufficiently vigorous in prosecuting the war. Senator Goldwater has called for victory in South Vietnam. Well, this strong action robs the Democratic charges, the Republican charges, of much of their sting. The GOP vice presidential nominee, Congressman Miller, conceded that today. He said the fact that Senator Goldwater was supporting the president's action would take the issue out of the campaign for the time being, though he said it might come back later if the situation deteriorated.
Walter Lister, do you see any effect on the attempts, the sort of cosmic high-level attempts between Washington and Moscow to come to various general political agreements and relax tension? Do you see this as a setback, let us say, to whatever progress there's been toward better understanding?
It's not a setback yet. It's a problem, though, because Moscow has to talk in two directions at once, not only to Washington, but to Peking. And to Peking and to Peking's allies within the communist camp, they have to sound as though they're defending the North Vietnamese. This is what their statement tries to do, but we're not quite sure it's going to work.
Frank, will there be any strains in the Western alliance because of this? Do you see any unhappiness that they might be dragged into something that they want to stay out of?
For the moment, only from the French side. The British have made it fairly clear that they regard this as legitimate self-defense. I talked to Dan Shore in Bonn tonight, and he says that the West German support is almost complete. The only difference comes from the French, and they refer everything back to President de Gaulle's press conference last month, in which he spelled out his attitude toward the Americans and the whole question of Southeast Asia.
That makes it sound almost as though the French were having a fairly hard time making up their own minds.
No, not at all. They're quite clear on it.
But it's the clarity of a month ago in a situation rather different from the one that prevails tonight.
In a sense, but in his speech last month, General de Gaulle made a reference to carrying the war into North Vietnam and said that, in effect, that anyone who did this would carry the responsibility for a broader war. So by referring us back to that speech, the French, in effect, are saying, that's it.
Gentlemen, one question that we had with us and totally unanswered at the United Nations all afternoon was the question of what may have started this whole episode. What might have been in the minds of whoever it was on the other side who sent those TPT boats into the attack? Do you have any ideas? Was there anything circulating in Washington today, Paul Niven?
Well, I must say, Senator Aiken of Vermont, who says he will support the president now that the die is cast, feels that the administration took a conscious decision some months ago, perhaps about the time of the Honolulu conference, to expand the war. And Aiken does not think that was a good idea. He has reservations about it, but now the die is cast, he'll go along with it. Now, whether expanding the war means, as Senator Morse charges, that we deliberately had our Navy ships just outside the international limit line while South Vietnamese vessels bombarded Vietnamese islands, North Vietnamese islands, within a few miles of the shoreline, is another question. Other senators say they know of no evidence to support Morse's allegation. Morse, on that basis, is going to oppose the resolution tomorrow.
That would make it sound as though there were a certain current of feeling on Capitol Hill that the North Vietnamese were justified, that they were themselves counterattacking in the first instance. Is that
true? I must say that Morse is the only one who has raised that question explicitly. Senator Aiken says that we have decided to expand the war, but they are a small minority, if they may in fact be the only two in the entire Congress of the United States.
One guess we've heard at U.N. headquarters is that the North Vietnamese might not have been acting on their own at all, but it might have been acting at the instance of Communist China, with Communist China wanting to probe American resolve, wanting to see if the United States would take the kind of kick in the shin that was represented by these two PT boat attacks without resorting to the kind of forceful retaliation that it finally did order. Was there any such speculation in France, Frank Kearns, where Paris does now have a direct line to Peking?
There's a lot of speculation about that, Dick, in the press and in private. There's been a lot of mention of what started this, why the provocation. There have been some pretty direct innuendos that China started it. Some of the right-wing press has put China as the aggressor, in fact, not North Vietnam. It's a strange situation, but that's the way it is.
Walter Lister?
This is pretty much the thinking here in Moscow, that it was Peking that must have had the initiative and pushed for this probing action to see just what the American reaction would be. The North Vietnamese, incidentally, come out with a communique that's carried here by TASS, in which they speak of their knocking down five American planes, call it a victory, and claim that the people of Vietnam and the troops of the Vietnamese Army are increasing their vigilance, ready to fight and thwart all the aggressive plans of the American imperialists.
So Moscow seems to be torn almost between an inclination to blame the United States and to blame Red China. Where will it land politically from here on?
Well, they're going to blame both, of course. Right now they're going to blame the American imperialists as the aggressors here. They'll be defending the people of both China and North Vietnam.
And do you see that this will have any implications for future U.S.-Soviet relations?
Well, it could strain them very much, unless this incident stops right here. If there are additional raids on North Vietnam, it's bound to strain relations considerably.
Paul Niven, do you see any inclination to press ahead if this is an advantage that the United States has now shown?
No, the president made it quite clear that this this would be limited. The Secretary of State had said after the first incidents, the other side got stung once. If they do it again, they'll get stung again.
The salient fact this evening seems to be that the world has taken this small collision in stride. This is not, or not yet, by any means a Cuban Missile Crisis, but a major, perhaps the decisive factor. Communist China is a law only to itself. This is Richard C. Hotellett, CBS News, New York.
This has been a CBS News special report, The Crisis in Vietnam, produced for CBS News by Al Snyder. Maury Robinson was news associate. This is the CBS Radio Network.